Welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, joined once again by Dave Cliff, Messaging PM. Dave, welcome back.
Thank you.
So last time we kind of saw some demos and talked about messages and message flows and things. This time we're going to kind of keep it at the architectural, you know, level of what's going on behind the scenes when we do message processing.
Yeah, last time we talked a lot about the kind of surface area of what exactly can I move around and touch.
Yeah.
But we didn't really get a whole lot of time to spend on, you know, what exactly is going on under the scenes and or behind the scenes, that is, you know, under the cover of this workflow service host thing and what exactly we're doing for you there.
Right. So this is sort of an architectural breakdown of workflow service host, and so people who've done WCF are familiar with the service host.
Yep.
Right? And so if you want to receive messages, you create a service host, you know, you tell it what your service is and you open your endpoint, it starts pumping messages through.
Mm-hmm.
So is that sort of the same role for the workflow service host?
Yeah, the cool thing about the workflow service host is we've taken the extensibility points that are available in the service host today, and we've gone and we've replaced a couple of them and leveraged the same infrastructure, and you can kind of see some of that mapping in terms of the WCF runtime pieces that underlie the workflow service host itself.
Cool. All right, so why don't you talk me through this? I'll kind of throw my questions out as you go. So what have we got here?
Great. So here's the workflow service host and kind of the moving pieces. And where we want to start is on the left of this diagram here. So we've got a couple of interesting entry points that we've talked through before. We talked about the application endpoints. So these are endpoints that I've hosted on my workflow service host to receive messages to my receive activities.
Okay. So when I create a workflow, it has some receive activities.
Mm-hmm.
Workflow service host looks at my workflow and says, ah, you're receiving messages. So it creates this endpoint for me. I don't have to actually do anything to create it. It's just the fact that I have receive activities, they show up there.
Yeah, we've added a feature in .NET 4 that will allow you to kind of have this default endpoints experience where when we look at the contracts that you're looking to expose, we can actually create an endpoint for you based on the base address that you've provided to the host.
So that was when I first did this, I was like, well, what do I have to put in my app config or my web config? And, you know, what binding am I going to use and all this kind of stuff? And then and I was surprised when it just worked and I didn't do any of that. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this host, what is this WF hosting endpoint? What is that?
Yeah, so this is one of the things we took a look at last time. This is an extensibility point that gives you kind of the control over what does the contract look like for this thing, and it gives you a bunch of hooks into the workflow runtime to allow you to create instances, resume custom bookmarks yourself.
Okay, so this was the thing, like if I wanted to have a contract that looked different than my workflow,
yep,
I could do that through that. And then the workflow control endpoint is something you guys add also?
This is something that you can add yourself. It's specifically for managing instances. So if you want to do things like calling suspend on instances or canceling instances or resuming, that's your hook into the instance control that's going on behind the scenes.
Okay, so when I'm working with Windows Server App Fabric, and it does those kind of things, it's done that by adding the control endpoint for me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It uses something called the Workflow Management Service that interacts with this workflow control endpoint to propagate all the control signals to the host.
Okay, so they're using an extensibility point, but you could use that yourself if you wanted. Like, I've had some other people in here who, you know, for whatever reason, are implementing their own custom host as a Windows service or whatever, they could implement workflow control endpoint as well.
Yeah, they could leverage the workflow control endpoint just like our workflow management service does today.
That's okay, right. Cool. All right.
So on the left, we've got, this is where the messages enter the system.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as you can kind of expect, given that we're a service host, like we talked about before, we actually get to leverage all the rich extensibility in the WCF runtime, or at least at the channel layer, all the extensibility that you want in terms of, you know, providing different bindings or using different protocol framing or pretty much anything you want to do with messages at the channel layer, you are free to do that with this extensibility.
So people might say, well, I've built some kind of custom binding element or thing. they can plug that in. It's going to work here totally fine, just like anything else in WCF.
Yeah, that's right? Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, so you plug in your custom binding. So when messages come in to the host, they're going to travel through an endpoint, obviously, up mm-hmm. the channel stack, as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the top of the channel stack where the dispatch layer lives, where we've actually plugged in our own custom logic for how to handle this message differently for dispatching to a workflow than you would be dispatching to a WCF service instance.
Okay.
And so at the top of the channel stack, the same thing that you're used to with WCF, we've got a message pump that's pumping messages out from the channel layer, mm-hmm. passing them up into particular control or particular operation invokers.
Right.
And we've got our own workflow-specific flavored operation invoker that we use to basically take messages from the WCF channel stack
yeah.
and move them into the workflow world. So this is the point in time where we're actually going and resuming bookmarks in the particular workflow instance
right.
and passing that message through. So you've got this really kind of neat handoff between here I am, a message in the WCF layer,
right.
and then all of a sudden I'm transitioning that message across the boundary into the workflow runtime,
right.
and my workflow can start processing it.
Now let me ask you, when you're writing a WCF service, one of the things you have to decide on is kind of, you know, what is the instancing behavior you want. You can have singleton, right. you can have per call, or you can have
Per session, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, and then you also have to decide on the concurrency mode. You can have them serialized or concurrent calls and things like that.
Yeah.
You don't decide any of that here because it's sort of a workflow just has the workflow model, right? You don't have to
That's
deal
right.
with any of that. It always works. So it's going to invoke on whatever, just some thread, like just some random thread, it's going to get and invoke it.
Yep, we're going to use the same kind of thread pool that WCF uses to bubble up to the workflow runtime.
Uh-huh.
And it's the, like you were saying, that the instancing mode for WCF services is very different than it is for workflow. And it's just a case of workflow is long running.
Mm-hmm.
You need instances that outlive the lifetime of a particular call or
right.
a particular session. And you want to be able to hook into this whole persistence pipeline for being able to take your instance and go store it away. And so that's where the instancing modes really, yeah, they don't make a whole lot of sense in the workflow world.
Like somebody might say, well, you know, maybe I want to have a singleton as a workflow.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that, you know, maybe that's possible somehow, but I mean, you tell me.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point. Actually, you can potentially implement a singleton workflow instance.
Yeah.
And it's all via that correlation mechanism that we talked about last time.
Okay.
So correlation is your way. That's actually one of the big pieces of what the workflow operation invoker does, is it's going to calculate a bunch of correlation keys,
uh-huh.
The data that we're pulling out of the message that we talked about.
Yeah.
And it's going to use that to know which instance that it needs to deliver this message to.
Okay.
And so you could imagine creating a correlation query that always resolves to the same instance. And so that's kind
okay.
of your way of getting a singleton instance.
So when a message bubbles up to the operation invoker, and it's got one of two outcomes. If it's a can create instance.
Yep.
So there's a option on the message receive where you say can create instance. It's always going to create a new one.
It will, yeah, will almost always create a new one.
Is
yeah.
there a case when it won't?
There are cases where it won't, actually. And that's a case where the reason it's called can create instance is
yeah.
because if a message comes in and it can be dispatched to an existing instance,
yeah.
Even if that receive set with can create instance, we'll still deliver that message there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but then if it bubbles up, it's a receive, but it's not a can create instance,
mm-hmm.
then it says, well, I'm going to have to find an existing instance that maps. So it's going to run the correlation queries.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Then it's going to resolve to, I have a workflow instance I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might be in memory already. It might be sitting there spinning, doing something.
Yep.
In that case, is it going to just, it's going to queue the message into the, well, queues might be the wrong word, but... How do you describe
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it'll basically buffer the message at that point and allow it to deliver it to the existing instance.
Okay.
And there are certain cases where when an instance is still executing and not ready to receive a message, that will hang on to it and wait for that instance to be ready.
And then you might have the case where the channel times out or something because it was too busy.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And so the nice thing about this is that there are certain cases where maybe there's certain race conditions where you've got a message coming in and the instance is maybe coming out of a delay. It's got maybe 5 seconds left on the delay. Well, we can hold that message.
Yeah.
Wait for the delay to complete and then go deliver the message.
Right, right.
But some of these cases are pretty tough to organize, and you have to be very careful with out of order messages being delivered, because there's some cases where if you get a message in an order that you don't expect, like our last example, we talked about receiving fruity drink orders before receiving register messages.
Right.
Well, in that case, you actually want to receive an error right away. You want the client to know, hey, this is a protocol violation. You've tried to send me a message that I'm not ready to receive.
Right, right.
And so all of that logic is handled at the operation invoker layer.
Okay, now, in the case of a singleton, I know this is a weird question, but it just popped into my mind.
Sure, yeah.
The way you described doing a singleton was a correlation that every message would match on.
Yes.
Now, the difference would be that normally with a singleton, I would want to support multiple concurrent calls, right? But this wouldn't do that. It would serialize all the calls because workflows are not made to support, in a single instance, multiple concurrent calls, right?
Yeah.
So if you really need multiple concurrent calls, you better write it just a WCF object and do all your low-level thread stuff, because that's workflow's not right model for that.
That's right. Yeah, I think there's certain cases where you want to have concurrent dispatch.
Yeah.
And we've got actually a new feature in .NET 4 called the dispatcher synchronization behavior that allows you to create a bigger pipeline for receiving messages there.
Okay.
But you're right in that workflow kind of semantically thinks about one thing happening at a time. You're really only thinking about one thread at a time and one thread of execution.
Right, right.
And so that's definitely the sweet spot for workflow.
Okay. So I probably went too low level there anyway, but okay. So the workflow operation invoker then does what?
So the workflow operation invoker, as I mentioned, it's got that message.
Yeah.
It's going to calculate a bunch of correlation keys, and then it's going to pass that message off to something called the Durable Instance Manager.
Okay.
And the Durable Instance Manager is, as we mentioned, workflows and instancing, very different than WCF. So we've got a component internally that actually manages what instances are in memory, what instances do I know about in the persistent store, what can I look up. So if the workflow operation invoker calculates a key that maps to a particular instance that isn't in memory, it's the job of the Durable Instance Manager to go off and look in its cache to see, do I have this instance? If I don't, then I need to go load it from the instance store.
Oh, okay.
And so it'll load that instance and get that instance into memory, start it running, and then as we talked about before, the role of the operation invoker then is just to resume the bookmark and get that message into the workflow.
Right. Now, that, for people who don't know the bookmark semantics of workflow, it's kind of interesting because, in the previous version of workflow, there was this sort of interesting, they used the notion of queues. It wasn't really a queue, but it sort of acted. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we just called it a bookmark, and when an activity says, I have some work to do, but I can't do it right now. Mm-hmm. I need something to do it. It can set a bookmark, and then later, whatever the host is, can say, here's your data, and you can resume your bookmark. Here it is.
That's
go.
Right. Yep.
Right? So your receive activities, tell me how they use bookmarks. When I put a receive activity, what happens?
Yeah. So a receive activity, its execution is actually very simple under the covers.
Yeah.
Really, all we're doing is, in the execute method for a receive activity, we set up a bookmark, and we wait on that bookmark.
Yeah.
And it's the host's responsibility to come in and, resume that bookmark with the message when the message is available. And then after that bookmark has been resumed, the only other thing receive is really responsible for is deserializing the message and then formatting it into the objects that you expect.
Okay. So you can actually see this in App Fabric when you look at the tracking events. You see that a receive activity, if a workflow is just waiting on a receive, it shows a pending bookmark, and it kind of has this long name with the name of the contract or something, and then
yep. Internal receive message. And yeah, that's right.
Okay, so then the host says, "I found you. I got this data off the wire, and I'm going to resume the bookmark. Here it is."
Yep.
But actually, it doesn't get the data off the wire. You said the receive activity does that.
Yeah, the receive activity will actually take a WCF message object as part of what's being passed from the operation invoker.
Okay.
And so it's at that point then we do all of the deserialization and then formatting to get you the objects that you're expecting.
Now, one of the interesting things that some people have, you notice right away, if you're used to working with lower level primitives of WCF, like operation context, for example, or trying to access message properties or things like that, you realize, like, hey, operation context.current is null here, and things like that. So, what do you do? Can you get access to those things?
Operation context in particular, we recognize that there's a lot of people who use this for a lot of things. And so we do have an extensibility point that you can leverage. You can actually go off and write your own custom scope activity to scope your operation context usage to a certain set of activities.
Okay.
And that allows you to take out whatever properties out of operation context you want and make them available to your workflow.
Okay.
The one of the main reasons that we didn't make that kind of readily available for you on the activity was just the fact that a lot of these parts of operation context, you can't persist when you actually have these objects outstanding, because a lot of them aren't serializable. We can't just take them with you as part of the persisted state and then be able to rehydrate you. And so you need to be very careful about what properties you're using and making sure that your workflow is not going to go persist while those are available.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, interesting.
But that's a great point. I mean, we have getting access to operation context, supremely important in order to, for people to get access to maybe custom headers that they want to use,
right.
Or kind of custom message properties that bubble up. One of the common ones that we've seen customers go after is, I want to look at the identity information of the caller.
Yeah,
that's a great thing that you can use. You can look at operation context.service security context, and you can get access to all that information.
Okay, and you have samples that show how to do
this
SDK. So we can definitely. I'll check the blog. I'll have something on there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So what happens next?
Well, so the Durable Instance Manager, as we mentioned, it's responsible for managing the instances that it knows about. But you've also seen, we've talked about a little bit about these host policies before.
Mm-hmm.
And these are policies that apply to the Durable Instance Manager and help us to determine what exactly to do with your instance in certain situations.
Okay.
And a good example is, maybe we've delivered a message to a receive activity, it's completed executing, and we've continued on in our workflow, and maybe we hit another receive activity at some point. So, just like before, we're going to set up a bookmark at that point.
Right.
We're going to sit on it, and at that point, the workflow is idle. The workflow is not doing anything, sitting around in memory, just kind of sucking up cycles.
But it's not really, it's not blocking a thread or anything like that.
That's
just sitting there consuming memory, though.
Yeah. And it's in a state where, if your host crashed for whatever reason, you maybe don't have that most up-to-date state in your database.
Right.
And so what we've got is something called the idle policy, the workflow idle behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And this applies to the Durable Instance Manager, and it allows you to set the amount of time after an idle point that you want us to wait before we go off and either persist or completely unload your workflow. So that is persist and take it out of memory.
So, this was an interesting thing, too. I was thinking in terms of designing the system, you want to think about persistence like a checkpoint almost. Like, we got this much done. Because if something went wrong, and the workflow suspended, if we were going to resume, we'd want to resume from the last checkpoint, right?
Yeah, you don't want to go redo the work.
Yeah, exactly. So like in the hands-on lab that I wrote for the Visual Studio 2010 training kit, I used a transacted receive scope, which gives me that checkpoint behavior, sort of. It says any work I did under the processing of the body of this receive is covered in a transaction.
That's right.
So in that case, like a lot of times when you receive a message, what you want to do is update, you know, your app database. You're going to write some contents of that message there so you don't lose whatever you got sent.
Yeah.
And then you're going to commit that transaction. So, but you want to persist at the same time. So you got your app data is stored and the workflow instance state is stored as well.
Yeah.
That's a very cool behavior.
Yeah, as part of the doing it as part of the same transaction is actually something that's new to Workflow 4, mm-hmm. and something that we were excited to be able to provide was now I can flow transactions in as part of my messages and be able to use that transactions, distribute it, you know, invoke DTC and be able to go off and, like you said, update my app data all within the same transaction.
Yeah.
And our default behavior out of the box for when we commit a transaction, so that is when you get to the end of a transaction scope, we'll go persist right away.
Yeah. So that's because to me, you know, like persisting on idle just feels a little, I don't know, feels a little random to me. Like, I mean, you could almost predict when it's going to happen because you go, well, my workflow is going to go idle here.
Yeah.
But maybe in some cases, you know, predicting the exact branch, you know, if you got a pick or a parallels involved where there's lots of ways in which it could go idle. I don't know. It just feels a little random to me. I'd like to be, you can be more explicit. You can drop a persist activity well, too. So,
yeah, we've seen a lot of customers want to use very explicit persist points, in which case they only use persist activities, and that's totally fine, too.
Right. Now, these policies actually are config settings, right, in your web config. Right?
Yeah, these are actually service behaviors that, if you're, you know, familiar with using WCF behaviors and these are very common to you, so you're very much used to just applying a bunch of service behaviors to your service. So you've got the workflow idle behavior we mentioned.
Right.
SQL workflow instance store behavior is another service behavior.
Right.
And then there's actually the other one that we didn't talk about yet was the unhandled exception policy. So the unhandled exception behavior, and that tells the durable instance manager, what do you want us to do with your instance when we receive an unhandled exception?
Yeah, so what confuses people sometimes is when they'll look at these things or they'll read the documentation on MSDN or see a sample or something, and they'll see us working with these behaviors in config or whatever, and then they'll see something like about Windows Server App Fabric, which is this nice UI and these little drop downs, and they go, no. Is that the same thing? Yeah, it's actually the same thing.
It is, yes, that's
right. You know, they're just manipulating the policy through a nice little UI.
Yep. Right? Yeah, which is great. I mean, it's wonderful to finally have some great tools on top of this stuff to make it, you know, just a simple click in order to be able to enable some of this.
Right, because when your workflow has an unhandled exception, one of the behaviors is abandon, just like give up, we're done. We don't know what to do with it because it's an unhandled exception.
Yep, that's aborting the instance in memory, basically.
Yeah.
So we don't touch the instance store there. We just abort it in memory, and it's kind of a rollback to the last persist point behavior.
Right. So the other one is suspend.
Yep.
Right? So in which case, but if you abort, doesn't it gets removed from the persistence store, right? Doesn't it?
No, the behavior of abandon is to not touch the persistence store.
Okay.
You can set your unhandled exception behavior to terminate, which is the one that you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And that'll go wipe that instance out entirely. You don't want to deal with it again. It's just gone completely.
Okay. So abandon is just like give it up, and then we might be able to resume from the persist point. You know, like if my classic one is my workflow calls another web service, and when we got there and we tried to call that server was down.
Yeah.
So it's going to be abandoned, but we could resume it later when we get the call the service is back up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the default behavior that we have set for that is abandon and suspend. So that's exactly the behavior you said. It's going to abort the instance in memory. We'll suspend it in the database. And then once the admin comes by and you know, make sure that that other server's back up and running, then you can go resume that instance and everything will go work.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. Well, this is super useful to get a peek kind of behind the scenes of what things are going on in the back, you know, and you always wonder in your head, you see these black boxes, you know,
yeah.
Something happened, a message got there and bam, it's in my workflow. It's kind of helpful to know, especially when you're running into trouble with things and trying to figure out. I know sometimes the exceptions you get are a little cryptic,
right?
Like especially if there's problems with the correlation query or can't find a key or whatever, then I found that sometimes I struggled to understand what was going on. But this helps a lot.
Yeah, and those type of exceptions that, you know, that are cryptic. I mean, we love hearing from customers and, you know, telling us, hey, I was working in this particular scenario and I got this and I have no clue what this tells me.
Yeah.
We can go off and, you know, we can improve that experience for our customers going forward.
Good. So feedback is welcome.
Feedback is absolutely welcome.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Dave, for joining us today.
Hey, this is great. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, we'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.